Baker McKenzie welcomes you to TMT Talk, the global TMT podcast series, focusing on sector-specific issues that are impactful on players in the technology, media, and telecoms industry.
Hi, we'd like to welcome you to another episode of the TMT Talk, Baker McKenzie's global TMT industry podcast. In this episode, we'll be discussing disputes in the context of virtual worlds, particularly metaverses. I'm Pablo Sle, I'm Senior Associate based in Madrid, and my areas of expertise include digital law, advertising, intermediary liability, content moderation, e-commerce, data protection, and intellectual property. I'm joined by Selander Gray and Sarah Pitt. Selander is a Senior Associate based in London who advises clients on both contentious and non-contentious employment law matters across a wide variety of sectors. Sarah is a Senior Associate in our Los Angeles office who focuses on complex commercial litigation in court, at both the federal and state level, and in arbitration. So to start us off, I wanted to ask Selander, from an employment perspective, what should companies be doing now to mitigate the risks of disputes arising out of the metaverse?
Thanks, Pablo. So there are a couple of key areas where we think there are going to be disputes for employers when they first adopt the metaverse, and that is in terms of avatar selection and harassment. Now, to manage disputes arising out of avatar selection, employers need to decide whether they're going to allow employees to be anyone via the avatar, or if they're actually going to require employees to have an avatar that looks like their real life selves. And there's pros and cons to both options. So if employers require avatars to look like employees' real life selves, this may cause issues where employees feel as though selection choices available to them do not represent their true selves. So, for example, employees may feel that their skin tone selection isn't wide enough to include a shade they feel encompasses their identity, and individuals with a physical disability or physical impairment may feel that there isn't an option that reflects that in the metaverse. Now, some of these issues can be resolved by close collaboration with tech developers on the metaverse platforms if employers are lucky enough to have that sort of collaboration. However, others are going to require employers to have a carefully considered policy approach at the outset, particularly if you decide to require avatars to reflect how your employees look in real life, which might be the case if you're going to ask employees to staff your virtual metaverse shop, for example. On the other hand, allowing employees free rein to choose their avatar can also cause issues. So employees may set up their avatar to impersonate others to make political statements or avoid detection for acts they do in the metaverse. Some employees may decide to enter the metaverse with protected characteristics they don't have in real life, which others may find offensive. And some employees could also choose to overly sexualize their avatars or exaggerate their avatar's features to make fun of colleagues. Now, if an employer decides to allow employees to enter the metaverse as anything they want, be it unicorn, penguin, dinosaur, one really important point will be thinking about having potentially a respectful communications policy in place to talk about how avatars need to ensure that they're respectful to other colleagues and ensure that employees aren't doing things like making fun of colleagues by exaggerating avatars' features. So ultimately, all roads to mitigate avatar disputes lead back towards having a standalone policy that employers have at the outset of metaverse adoption, given one of the first things that you have to do when you join a metaverse is to create your avatar to deal with some of these points. The second biggest risk from an employment concern is an increase in harassment in the metaverse, and we've seen that already outside of the employment sphere in the gaming metaverse adaption. Now, given you can assert your physical presence and there tends to be lower standards of behavior generally in a VR environment, there's more opportunity to harass your fellow employees, either by touching, getting too close to an avatar, or even encouraging all the team to move away from a particular avatar in a team meeting. Now, to mitigate these risks, it's really important at the outset to ensure all employees and managers understand what behavior is expected of them. So really hammering home that message that behavior that happens in the office is also expected inside the metaverse. And you want to think about updating your code of conduct to include metaverse-specific examples. That should really help drive it home to employees that the expectations of behavior in the metaverse are the same as those in the office. You should also consider updating your existing training sessions for employees and managers to include examples of harassment or bullying in the metaverse so you can show that you've taken reasonable steps as an employer to stop that from happening. The final point to consider is, depending on which metaverse you're in, you can build in barriers that prevent avatars from getting too close. Options currently include a bubble in which employees are protected from encroachment, or a feature to disappear if, for example, another avatar tries to touch you or punch you. The final thing that employers need to remember to help mitigate risks of disputes arising from harassment in particular is make sure you've got a really good reporting line so employees can raise issues of harassment early and that they feel as safe reporting issues of harassment in the metaverse as they do if they happened in the office. So ultimately, the key is looking at your policies and procedures before you go into the metaverse and thinking whether they're fit for metaverse purposes. Now, one really interesting thing I find in relation to metaverse disputes is the question of how they're going to be adjudicated. And Sarah, I know you've been thinking about that. So how do you think metaverse disputes will be adjudicated? And do you have any tips for TMT companies on how to control that?
Thanks, Elena. That was really interesting and very good things to think about. From the litigation perspective on the commercial side, the advent of the metaverse, or perhaps more appropriately of metaverses, has raised a number of questions and uncertainties relating to litigating in the metaverse and metaverse-related disputes, one of which is jurisdiction, including how, where, and under what laws disputes will be litigated. This new frontier is not bound by physical borders and is not necessarily tied to any one geographic location. It's also not governed by a single regulatory body. Instead, at least as it's currently contemplated, the metaverse will have no geographic or jurisdictional bounds. So in such case, what court has jurisdiction over assets bought and sold entirely in a potentially decentralized virtual world with virtual currency? Or who gets to enforce intellectual property rights in this sphere, and where do you enforce them? Or what about, as Zelena was talking about, harassment or defamation complaints related to in-metaverse conduct? Further complicating this issue, we can expect that many lawsuits arising from the metaverse will also be filed against and potentially by mere usernames rather than specifically identifiable human beings. And given that courts must generally confirm personal jurisdiction over a defendant in order to render a legally enforceable judgment against them, an influx of cases involving anonymous user defendants in traditional judicial fora is sure to create serious hurdles to prompt an effective dispute resolution in the metaverse. Now, some of these questions should be somewhat easily answerable through contract drafting, but the question definitely becomes particularly interesting in the face of traditionally common law or other non-contractual claims. The answer to these questions is still largely yet to be tested. So how are courts handling metaverse disputes? In short, there has been no uniformity in approach across the globe. And in fairness to the courts, they may not be in the best position to resolve these jurisdictional quandaries. Some jurisdictions have toyed with the possibility of meta courtrooms. In Colombia, for example, a magistrate recently granted a petition for a hearing to take place in the metaverse with participants using virtual reality headsets. Others, including the U.S., have looked to find physical geographical ties to identify a more traditional jurisdictional pull. But in the face of this uncertainty, companies need to carefully consider any metaverse-related agreements with consumers, clients, vendors, anyone in that sphere, and very intentionally select a venue, favorable choice of law, and process for adjudicating disputes. However, it's certainly possible that the facts of any particular claim may involve conduct occurring across multiple metaverse platforms, which could create ambiguity or contradictions as to where parties' disputes must be filed. And instead, the biggest platforms may well be incentivized to band together and create their own dispute resolution forum that permits litigation by users and avatars rather than individuals and corporations. One way is that parties can enter so-called smart contracts relating to digital assets governed by blockchain technology, and in those can choose decentralized dispute resolution bodies such as Claros, Aragon, and Jur. The benefit of these courts are the decision makers sitting as judges have the power to automatically transfer cryptocurrencies or digital assets that are subject to the smart contract. There's no need for potentially difficult and expensive judgment enforcement efforts by the prevailing party. On the other hand, these courts will likely be equipped to handle only the sort of breach of contract and related claims arriving from entry into and performance of these smart contracts, as opposed to the platform harassment and bullying claims I just discussed. In any event, it's important to be sure that the clauses drafted leave no room for doubt as to your contracting intentions, though particularly in the context of consumer relationships, it's nonetheless important to remain wary of the risk that local law likely of the locale where the allegedly injured user is physically located, may intervene. And so sort of to that, Pablo, I know you've been thinking about content moderation and intermediary liability. So I'm wondering how you think that's likely to play out in virtual worlds like the metaverse.
Yeah. Thanks, Sarah. Well, first of all, content moderation is not new, right? It's something that started a long time ago on internet forums and blogs and happens every day on social media and digital platforms. Platforms have to make sure that the users can enjoy safe environments where they do not suffer harassment or attacks, or where the content that is published is not against the law or does not infringe intellectual property rights of third parties. So this is the same as in any community, right? There are some things that are allowed and others that are not. Also, lately, we are seeing more and more types of harmful content, such as disinformation, hate speech, or deepfakes, which is also putting more pressure on digital platforms to take down content. But at the same time, these platforms have to respect the right to freedom of speech. They have to allow users to communicate and to express their ideas. At the end of the day, finding this balance between freedom of speech and content moderation is a real challenge and already gives rise to many disputes between digital platforms and their users. This is the current situation on digital platforms, but of course, this will increase exponentially in the metaverse. In the metaverse, users do not just post content like text or images or videos. The metaverse allows an immersive experience. Users can interact and participate in a much more active way. This means that users can potentially engage in harmful behavior that goes beyond what we are used to see now in social media. For example, virtual reality allows users to attend an event, to access a store, or to participate in a meeting with others. The possibilities are many, so the risks also increase. For example, there have already been cases in which moderators have had to expel a person from an event in the metaverse because that person was harassing another user or trying to get on the main stage or for virtual sexual harassment. That's why some people say that we are no longer talking about moderating content, but about moderating behavior. And also, from a legal point of view, we see a trend to make platforms more responsible for the content that they host. The best example of this trend is the Digital Services Act that was approved in the European Union a couple of months ago. It is true that the general rule is that platforms are not liable for the content that they host, and this has not changed much. This is what we call in the EU the safe harbor, which is similar to the protection that platforms have in the US under Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. However, platforms now have a lot of very onerous obligations. Many of them have to do with transparency. For instance, in Europe, they have to publish information on the number of content moderation requests that they receive and how they deal with those requests. So we can say that the landscape is changing and that both the complexity of content moderation itself in the metaverse and the new regulations, especially in Europe, means that platforms and companies that are present in the metaverse will face even more complaints from users, particularly if they do not get it right. Thanks very much to everyone for listening to our discussion today on disputes in the metaverse. We hope you found today's episode informative. Please tune in for another episode in the coming weeks.